161 Unit District Committee to order. If you'd all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And a roll call. Mr. Martin?
Here.
Mr. Faber?
Here.
Mr. Marin's here. Dr. Rains?
Here.
Mrs. Minor?
Here.
And Mr. Cook?
Here.
You all are present and counted for. We only have one item on the agenda, which is the feasibility study agreement. And what we did at our last board meeting is determined through the full board that this committee had approval to contract with DLS for the feasibility study in an amount not to exceed $35,000. I then contacted DLS and asked them to provide us with an agreement which we could execute. They worked on that and they got it to us. Unfortunately, they got it to us today. And I was expecting it to come into my USIT 161 account, which is where I sent the request from, and they sent it to my regular account. And they sent it at 4:30 today, so by the time I got it, Dr. Rains was nice enough to print copies out, but we're really going through this almost cold, which is fine. We'll be able to discuss the things that I think we need to address and then go from there. So what I'm going to do is just pass these out. They are essentially two letters of agreement is how they're framing this. And one of the things we're going to talk about is it's two separate letters of agreement. So now that I've got those handed out, I would like to do just a brief introduction on other things that are going on while everybody's got that, just to cover off a couple of things. First of all, today board members have been contacted fairly heavily regarding a request for 161 to consider any action related to North, and in this particular case, legal action that's being requested of the 161 board. To address this as quickly as possible, I actually reached out to our legal representation today. Dr. Rains and myself reached out to him. We spoke to him this afternoon around lunchtime and brought him up to speed on what was going on and asked him for his input on this and you know what the possibilities were and what the correct terminology will be. The feedback we've received is that 161 really doesn't have a legal option here. 161 does not, according to our legal counsel, have any standing in the consideration of what 210 does with their building. And what he indicated that means is, for lack of a better way to phrase it, from a legal standpoint, it's really none of our business. and 161 would not be directly impacted to a degree that would give us standing to take any legal action against the district. And he likened it to the fact that 161 is not even a taxpayer to 210, and 210 is not a taxpayer to 161 because they're both tax-exempt organizations. He said someone who was a taxpayer or someone who had children in the school, it might be a different story, although he certainly didn't say it would be. But he said in this case there is no direct relationship that would give us standing. And the example that he continued to use is we have no standing that would be beyond what any other feeder district would have, so 157C or 122. And also played it in reverse where he said if you were looking to lease part of Mary Drew for use by another organization, 210 would have no ability to come in and say, wait, we were thinking about doing that and we were headed down this path. So he said at this point in time, there really is no action that 161 could consider due to a lack of standing. And that's the quote that I have from him, is the lack of standing. And so there wasn't much research, but he indicated that he really didn't need to research it. And he's been with the district for a long time and certainly has been representing school districts for even longer. So I have that information to share with the public at large. And then I would also like to, for anybody who listens to this, as you're sending emails to the 161 board, please understand that 161 does not own or control the Lincoln Way North building. We did not close the Lincoln Way North building. We do not control where Lincoln Way does classes. 161, this school board, 161 school board is responsible for the Grammar School District. So there is no need for us to step down off of our pedestals and figure out what the community really wants. There is no need for us to put on a ruse of doing a feasibility study only to do this behind everyone's back. Before you send emails, please ensure that you understand what you're asking 161 board members to do. It can be a little difficult when you're reading through a tremendous number of emails and you hit some that are negative for things that we don't even control. So again, 161 does not control anything to do with North, which ties into the statement that I just made about the standing that the lawyer pointed us to. We did not close North. We don't make determinations of who would use the building, and we don't control anything that Lincoln Way does. That is District 210's board. So again, that's just, if you can share that information, try to make sure everyone's on the same page.
And so, if I could add something to that.
Absolutely.
That, you know, we get a lot of emails on a subject like this. I don't reply to those. If you start to reply to one, I feel you have to reply to all of them. So it's one of those situations where we're not, you know, I, as an individual board member, I'm not ignoring those emails and the questions that people send. That's what this public forum is that we can get this information out to everyone. We're not ignoring you. We're not standing on our pedestal or anything like that. For the most part, we usually let Mr. Marin do that as our board president. He has replied to some of those emails, but as an individual board member, I'm not ignoring the public. You know, I'm reading every one of those emails, but I won't reply to them individually. So please understand that. And I think others are acting the same way, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, in the same way.
Yeah.
And if I stood on a pedestal, I would definitely hit my head on the ceiling. So, okay. Any other questions on that? Shared all the feedback I've got on that. Let's jump into these two letters that we have in front of us. And the way that this has been structured is there is one letter of agreement that covers the 1A section, which is the demographic study and the long-term population study. And then the other document covers really sections 1B through 1D at the $22,000, and that's more of the tax impact, the implications of the North building and what it would cost to provide a high school experience for the number of students that are found under 1A. Again, not a ton of time to review these, but I will say that I do appreciate the fact that they're relatively simple and straightforward, so they're not overly complex and they did not get bogged down in legalese. So I have come up with 7 areas that I think we should get input on and then decide how we want to feed this back to DLS to get them to make adjustments and ultimately get to signature. So I'll start with these. If others have concerns as we jump in, please raise them as we go along. We'll keep this as a fairly informal discussion.
Which document are you starting with?
Well, my very first issue is with both of them. And the main issue that I see is when we got the school board, the full board, to give us authority to do this, I believe the motion that we had was explicit to DLS, and this calls for us to contract individually with Charles Coffrin for the demographic study. And what we'll need here is, in order to keep this as simple as possible, this can be DLS doing business as, or Charles Coffrin doing business as DLS, but I'd like to get these merged into one agreement so that we could sign off on it. We knew from the beginning that Charles Coffrin was going to be doing this study. That's not really the issue. He's the one with the expertise. The problem that we have is contracting with him individually would be slightly pedantic, but it is a different entity than we had in the board motion. So my thought there is just to go back to them and ask how we can quickly address this. Again, no problem with him doing the work. There's no change in the dollar amount. Everything is exactly as we would have expected. Most of the terms and conditions are identical between the two documents, outside of what's going to be provided. It's really just a naming convention and what we're going to sign off on. So I'm hoping that that'll be a pretty simple fix. Worst case scenario, certainly the name change doesn't impact the meat of the study. We'd simply have to convene a special meeting and amend the authorization that we got to include Charles Kaufman. But again, even in that worst case scenario, it takes 3 days to get that done. We just need to assemble four board members. The next thing is the payments. Both documents lay out payments as half due at contract execution and half due when the reports are delivered. The reports are delivered, the demographic study is hopefully delivered at the end of October, beginning of November. The other studies are set to come in November. Just for ease in what I'm going to cover later as far as potential termination or what we do if data is not available, I'd like to ask them to split this into thirds, giving them a third up front, a third halfway through, and a third when it's done. It'll impact their cash flow a little bit. They'll end up with two-thirds before they get to the end, but they'll have to wait a little while for the second third. And again, that'll play into two of these other points that we'll cover. The first one, first kind of major point that we hit is in the demographic study, which is in the Charles Coffrin document, they point out that the district will provide student address information, which we believe we will be able to do for grades K through eight is what they request. They request the same from the district for grades 9 through 12. This needs to be cleaned up in that we don't have that information as a district, and we're happy to co-sign on to a request. This would normally be classified as directory information, so it should be something that would be shareable by the school district. But we have no way to confirm at this point in time if the amount of data, the number of years, because they're looking for up to 10 years backwards, exists, if Lincoln Way maintains that information, in what format it is, and how quickly they'd be able to turn it around. So we know for us, we think that the DLS folks would have a better idea because they've worked with a number of schools in the past. They're not looking for names, simply for addresses, and that's so that they can plot from a demographic standpoint what each class looks like. So going back, if you were to go all the way back per their request, you'd start in 2009. In 2009 through 3 years ago, you'd be looking, I believe, just for Lincoln Way North data, because that's what would overlay with 161. And then after that, we'd be looking for Lincoln Way East data, and then they run the exclusionary program through Will County by address, and they do all the analysis of it. So again, the main issue is they make it a duty of ours to provide. We want to change that for a request to the high school and have them frame exactly what they want and keep this as simple as possible. The other question that this begs, though, is what if that data is not available? Or if it's only available for 3 years or 5 years, whatever the answer is, what does that do to a report? Clearly, from a study standpoint, if we can give you going back 10 years, you can build off of that the high school data. Is that what he would do, or does part of the report go missing? And there's just no mention of what happens if the data is not available. And I think we need to cover that off so that we at least have an expectation that if they can't get that data or that many years of data, they'll fill in the blanks using some statistical tools model, or does that just mean we're stuck with K through 8? They can forecast us, but they can't do the high school part, which hurts its tie-in to the feasibility study. And again, haven't posed this question to them. It's not that they can't answer it. It's just that it doesn't happen to be in the document, which I appreciate. That means they think it's a slam dunk they're going to get it. So hopefully it's not, you know, too hard to muster. I checked with Dr. Raines, and doing a very quick analysis, we believe we'd be able to provide the 10 years of data and addresses. And again, this would be considered by us to be what's called directory information, and we won't be sharing names or student identities. This is just addresses within our district. And then they'll, you know, be tied over the years to show how the cohorts move through.
I know high schools have to keep records for, I think, 60 years in some way, but is it in a form that they can use, you know,
right?
Is it the correct directory information that they need?
Right. And I mean, what they're asking for is really just street address, zip code, and year of school. It's a very basic report. The other things that they're asking that we take care of is when they go and look at the live birth information, some addresses are going to fall out and require manual review. The way this works is we can have access to the live birth data because of our status as a school district, but they can't extract that and take it away from the Will County Health Department for HIPAA purposes. Therefore, we have to send someone to accompany him on the day that he does this. And then if the address falls out, that person can help spot it on the map and talk about where it would go into as far as our schools, because they subdivide this into our six schools. So there was nothing. Dr. Raines, I'll ask you, there was nothing I thought was out of line in their request. No. It's just really what they want from 210 related to the high school addresses, and I just can't look at anyone and then nod at that right now, but we'll get that covered off. So that raises another question. What if the data is not available or not shared in the non-Charles Coffrin sheet, they don't list any data dependencies on us. And so I'm assuming there are none and just want to confirm that. So again, very reasonable, very simple. They've laid everything out very straightforward for us. I don't think there's an issue. Both documents do speak of termination. For some reason, both documents ask for 15 days notice for termination. We'd really like that to be more like 5. And the reason for a termination would be there are certain events, which I think we're all aware of, that could kill the feasibility study. Maybe. I guess I shouldn't even guess at this point in time. There's far too many variables. But because there's no major workforce involved here, no major travel. 5 days seems like it should be plenty of time to ramp down any activities, calculate what's owed, and then, you know, settle the bill. The other thing is they don't talk about how fees are calculated in the event of termination. They do give a per hour fee, and I'm assuming that per hour is what they use to calculate it. They may use a percent of completion. I don't know that I have a preference. Just want to lay it out in very, very high level terms so that if it does happen, everybody knows what they're getting. Travel, the Charles Coffrin document does a good job of stating what travel is included and then says that any other travel would be pre-approved by the district. And I think we just need to mimic that in the first letter of agreement, or second, however you're looking at it, for 1B through 1D. Just that they would have it pre-approved, and we can make that pre-approved by one of us or pre-approved by Dr. Raines. Again, we just don't want any surprises where there's, you know, thousands of dollars in hotel bills that we didn't see coming and they think they're getting reimbursed for. I don't anticipate that. The Charles Coffrin document does a very nice job of laying this out. I think you just mimic it and take it over to the other side. The indemnification clauses are very standard, and I don't really see an issue with either one. They just want to be held harmless in the event that, you know, creating the report and making this data available. And finally is the confidentiality clause, or what I'm referring to, the confidentiality clause. The document that covers 1B through 1D has a nice paragraph in here where it says they'll comply with all requirements for maintaining the confidentiality of data. That's great. The only thing we would want to do is stretch that a little bit and make it clear that District 161 is responsible for compliance with FOIA, the Open Meetings Act, and will distribute and share this information as needed. They should be delivering the data only to us. We know that this will eventually become public data as it comes in and is reported through us. But for any number of reasons, including making sure that we actually follow the rules, we don't want to depend on an outside party to do FOIA or, oh, this was going to be public, so I turned it over. There are fairly strict controls around this. We have a FOIA officer. We want to keep them in the loop. And this document won't be subject to FOIA while it's being worked on, as it's a working paper. It will become FOIAable once it's delivered to us, and we just want to make sure that everything's documented. We follow the rules and keep everyone on a level playing field. Again, I don't think they're going to object to that language. I just want to make it clear. First of all, I think it helps them and it indemnifies them against having to comply with FOIA. That's our job. And FOIA requests should come in through us and be processed by us. And that is really all I had. I know that sounds like a lot, but there's nothing that I think is a major sticking point. I think the biggest issue is the data that they want for grades 9 to 12. And I don't think it's a big deal. We just have to make it clear that, you know, they can reach out for that data. We'll sign off on it. It's really the same as them reaching out to Will County, where they make it clear the request has to come from us, but they'll structure the request, give us the point of contact, and monitor the request. So
does this confidentiality agreement cover the entire period in which it's being dispensed with?
It does. I mean, to be honest with you, their confidentiality agreement shouldn't expire when the study is complete. Because again, we don't want anyone going to them for this data. It is public data, it will be made public, and everyone will have access to it. We just want to force that through the proper channel. So they would contact us and we have it. I mean, there are other ways that it could branch out. For example, if 210 were to publicly request a copy and we supplied it to them, it would then become a FOIA-able document through 210 because they would have it. But it would then go through their FOIA officer. Same could happen with the Park District or any other entity, but those entities have FOIA officers who've passed the training and understand the rules. So at least we'd be following the chain. Their confidentiality clause, should they ever be contacted for something, they should be directing that back toward us. And that doesn't expire when their report's delivered. It's also going to cover things, and I don't foresee this at all, but in the file that's shared, if they're helping Kevin construct the file and the first version of the file has a student's name in it, or they look at it and say, here are the records available and how we'll trim them down, it covers us that way. I don't foresee that happening because what they're asking for is so simple, but it's nice to see that they've thought ahead and, you know, that we're covered for any accidental data exposure. And I think that's pretty standard in contracting now, that everybody's got a, you know, non-disclosure agreement in place before they can work with you. And again, the example I just gave is not an expectation. What they're asking for is very simple. This is not a detailed report by our standards at all, and it's something that our technology support team can put together fairly quickly. So, having now had 5 minutes to read through the document, what are your thoughts?
I have a question. Are you mandated to do records disposal through the state of Illinois? Okay, so
I'm not.
So if you are, the length of time that you keep the records for the students should be the same as 210.
It is.
Yep. So it should be on your records disposal document,
mm-hmm.
To say exactly what, how long you have to keep each
yes.
record for, and if it is indeed 10 years, then they should have the same records for sure.
Yep.
It's in what form do they have them, I think.
Right.
Oh, right.
There are permanent records and there are temporary records. The length of time you have to maintain them as a school district are different.
Right.
But the basic demographic information that we're looking at here is probably not going to be an issue with that.
Right. I think it's at least 10 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and again, if we were asking for something that was more individual, student ID numbers, social security numbers, that's all out of bounds for reporting. But in this case, addresses and zip codes, fairly standard directory piece of information. Mm-hmm. So,
apologize for not paying attention sooner, but the sign-off on this will occur at the next board meeting, is that right?
Well, it doesn't have to even wait for the next board meeting.
Good.
I mean, in theory, depending on how we decide to proceed tonight, this could be in place in 2 days.
Both of them, Charles and?
Yes, I mean, as long as they can switch to somehow do, you know, Charles Coffrin doing business as DLS, or just put one under the other as a schedule.
DLS gives him a 1099.
Right. Behind this, we sign off on one document and they can divide it up however they want. I don't think they're trying to be overly tricky. I think they're being too transparent and saying this guy's doing this and he's getting this and we're doing this and doing this. They're just being extremely transparent and very clear about what they're doing. And we have made no request to merge them together. I wasn't sure if they were going to do that when they sent it to us. They sent them as two separate. They say there will be two separate, and we'll work with them. I was saying in the worst case scenario where they say, no, we can't.
Okay.
He can't put DLS in front of his name, then we'd have to go back and, you know, get the board stuff amended. But even then, we don't have to wait for the next board meeting.
We need four board members.
Right, you get four board members together and you have literally a 5-minute meeting. I will go ahead with other questions. I don't know if anybody has other questions or concerns. Dr. Raines, you've had the Charles Coffrin, you've had both of them longer than anybody, because I was looking in the wrong email box.
10 minutes longer.
Right, right.
No, I would like to run the final version through district legal counsel.
Yes.
Before the board signs.
Yep. And that's a standard procedure, and again, it takes him an hour.
Right.
And if he has any concerns, he'll pick up the phone and we'll address them right away. But we do that on anything that we do is run it through him. Anything else?
I think it's smart to add the FOIA piece. I mean, we don't know how long DLS is going to be in business, any of those kind of things. It just protects us, you know, out through the future, so.
Well, and it protects them, to be honest with you.
Exactly.
You know, getting requests for the information and they send it and then someone says, oh, I FOIA'd it. DLS isn't subject to FOIA. We are. And it's just having a gatekeeper there because the rules around that are sometimes complex and FOIAs can be burdensome, so.
I do like the idea that the enrollment studies deadline is before any of the other deadlines
mm-hmm.
in terms of the timeline because we know that that's the driver.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his statement of work, and I say his because it has his name on it, he does make it clear that he's dependent on the information from us and how quickly we can get it. He's also dependent on Will County, but he has a great deal of experience in working with them, and he believes that they'll be able to accommodate this fairly quickly.
And I think he knows exactly what he's asking
yes.
for.
Yes.
That's half the key, is
right.
asking the right question.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, he talks about, oh, I'm going to create this type of base map and digitize this, and I'll need the district to review it. Well, obviously, if we take 2 weeks to review it, that'll be a problem. But, again, he seems to lay everything out very clearly as to what he's going to do. And he has worked specifically with Will County before, and he mentioned that in his notes. So he does not anticipate any issue in working through us with Will County, which was another good thing to hear because every county keeps this information differently. So the fact that he's done Will County before is good.
Mr. Chair, we're also pretty familiar with this geocode system as well because we had to use it before. So that's another bonus in terms of speed to get the enrollment study completed.
Yeah, most of this just seems like things that are located on databases.
Yeah.
Really, that's it. Just asking for the correct, you know, information the first time so you don't have to, you know.
And then having the software to overlay everything
exactly.
and create the picture, which, you know, he seems to do. He asked for, what do you say, an address or a transportation expert?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, we do have one.
I don't know who we would say.
Grant.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's who could work with him if any addresses fall out, just mm-hmm. to help him determine where they go.
Will he present this information to us, or is he just going to give us some paper form?
So that's another thing that is laid out extremely well in the Charles Cochran agreement. He will give us a presentation in PowerPoint that we can use. If we want him to come and do it,
we have to pay transportation
for a public
costs.
Presentation and no additional
and
costs.
And overnight lodging.
Yeah.
He's out of Missouri, I believe.
Yeah.
I thought he said. Yeah, so if he comes to do the presentation, one presentation, we don't pay for labor, we just pay for travel, which is what we would expect. Additional presentations, then we cover travel plus $125 an hour. So the first one, again, we're just paying for travel, which we've agreed to otherwise. He also does a very nice job of laying out, this is when I expect to travel. It's very limited. Everything else we're going to do by phone or email or, you know, other file sharing. I think he calls it FTP. But so he does a good job of that. That's actually a very good point, though. The main DLS document doesn't talk about the presentation. And the overall feasibility study, we would want that presented, correct? So we need to transfer the the presentation of the study language from one document into both of them. Okay. Anything else from anybody as we go through this or as you've been thinking about it? So we can do this a couple of different ways. I can, or anyone can, summarize what we talked about here, send it off to them. We can then, you know, based on what I've shared, try to get to a final copy and then share that, get together and execute it, which would be a process that would take whatever time they needed to make the changes plus 2 days, right? So I guess I shouldn't say Friday, it would be Monday at the earliest. Although we can get together on Saturday if anybody's got a lot of free time to burn. I am fine taking these points and contacting DLS and working with them to get into a document that I think matches this. I'm also happy if anybody else wants to do it.
I think it should be consistent with who has been in contact with.
Yeah,
them, so. That just makes sense to me.
Like I say, I don't think there's any hard sticking points here. And once we prepare a comprehensive red line or single document, I can share it via email and we can move forward.
Do we even need to reconvene?
Well, we could agree that if all of these things are incorporated and taken care of, then I can go ahead and execute it, which I'm fine too. We just kind of have to do a summary list.
Yeah, I don't see any of this as being, you know, a roadblock at all.
Okay. Because I guess what we can do is just say we're agreeing to the execution of this by the committee chairman, assuming that, and I'll just list these 8 things, are addressed as discussed today, and then if there's any variance from that, we can get back together. Otherwise, again, we're not talking about price here. That's already decided.
Right.
You know, the travel pre-approval, I guess they could say no, but that would seem unreasonable. I just don't expect any of this to be a big issue.
No.
Okay. Before we jump to taking a vote on that, why don't we just see if there's any public comments? Got possible 7 public comments. Anybody? Okay, we've got no public comments, so we'll jump back to the feasibility study. So I will make a motion that we authorize the chairman, myself, to execute a copy of this agreement with DLS, assuming that the following issues are addressed as discussed during today's meeting. The contracting entity, the payment schedule moving to 1/3 increments, pre-approval of travel, termination clause, including reduction of the 15 days and documentation of how fees are calculated, expansion of the confidentiality clause to cover FOIA, OMA, and making 161 the sharer of the document, the extension of the presentation of the report to the overall report from just the demographic report, and information as to the inclusion of information as to what the outcome of the demographic report will be if requested information is not available or not shared in a timely manner.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any questions or comments on this? Did I miss anything? So this will allow us, I'll go off, have this discussion, assuming that we can close all these points, I can execute the document and they can get started on the work then. Mm-hmm. If there's no other questions or comments, we'll take a quick vote. Mr. Martin?
Aye.
Mr. Faber?
Aye.
Mr. Marin? Aye. And the motion passes. So I will reach out to them tomorrow. And I will also reach out to legal counsel to make sure that he's available to give this a once-over as soon as I can get it available.
Thursday or Friday at the earliest.
Yep.
Whatever works.
Okay, so we've got that, and again, I'd like to thank DLS. They did turn this around. I hope I didn't make it sound like they were slow or sent it to the wrong address. They turned it around. They kept it very simple, which I think is appropriate here. And any issues that we do have, I think, are because they're being overly transparent. So I think they did a nice job of turning this around. So with that, I will make a motion to adjourn. Can I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor, acknowledge by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And we are adjourned for the evening. Thank you.
And Mr. Mayor.